I'm Mark Simpson, and this is Intersection. It's been a year since Teresa Jacobs was elected Orange County mayor. She's faced a jobless rate that remains near 10% and a housing market that is among the hardest hit in the country. Jacobs' position on political ethics and fiscal restraint is clear, but it has brought her up against Orlando Mayor Buddy Dyer over funding for a new performing arts center. She's also focused on reforming the region's agencies for the jobless and prioritized transportation issues such as SunRail and the Expressway Authority. Jacobs joins me for a discussion on the state of Orange County. That's ahead on Intersection. And I'm so happy to be joined by Orange County Mayor Teresa Jacobs. Good to have you back on.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's great to see you again. You know, the economy does remain a difficult issue for Central Florida. And during a recent panel discussion with other local leaders and economists, you said the region's on the right track, but still relying too heavily on low-paying tourism jobs. How do you overcome that?
You know, the way we do it is we have to continue to rely on tourism. It's the economy that brought us really to the global market. But we've got to also expand the other areas. And we've done a pretty phenomenal job when you look at the last 10 years. You don't change your economic base overnight. But things like the Medical City, the Sanford Burnham Research Institute, the work we've done with the Research Park, a lot of our incubators that we've developed out working with UCF, we're going in the right direction. We have a very strong cluster in modeling, simulation, and training. And one of the really cool things that I see as a future economic driver for us is taking modeling, simulation, and training, which was once the domain of the gaming industry, kids' video games primarily, as well as a resource for the defense industry. We're now marrying that with what we're doing in the area of medical services, medical research, but more importantly, medical training. And then coupling that with the fact that we are the number one place in the entire country for medical conventions and trying to market ourselves as the medical training center, not only for the country, but for the whole planet.
And then at the same time, you don't want to end up turning your back, though, on the tourism economy, which is so visible and also vital to the region. Do you think that you as Orange County Mayor have any sway to try to improve those low-wage jobs, which are the foundation of that industry?
Well, I will tell you that the growth that we've had in Central Florida, we have, I think we're number two in the state still in job creation this year, trailing slightly by the Tampa region. But the growth has been primarily in the tourism and the service sectors. Now, is that ideal in the long run? No. But if you're unemployed, a job is a job, you know. And so a lot of the people that are unemployed in those lower wage jobs. So we're very encouraged about that. I think the best thing about our tourism industry is that it has been incredibly sustainable in a very difficult time. We actually broke the record last year, the national record, of entertaining more than 50 million visitors, 51.4 million visitors in a tough economy. But the best thing for Central Florida is everybody across the world knows Orlando. And so we have brand recognition, and that's an incredible asset. The downside is we're a bit typecast. They know us as the place to come and play and have fun and vacation. They do not look at us as a serious business destination or a great place to live. And that's probably my number one mission right now, is to change our reputation, expand it, and have people think of us as the ideal place to live and work.
What about that sense of identity? You said people see this place as Orlando. You represent Orange County as the Orange County mayor. Do you feel the need to carve out a separate identity for Orange County, or can
No.
you be symbiotic with Orlando and be okay with that?
No, we have to be symbiotic. This has been a debate not only with Orange County but with some of the counties in the region about the name Orlando. And, you know, locally we understand the distinction. Orlando is the biggest city in Orange County. I represent 14 cities. Orlando is one of them. But outside of Orange County, the rest of the world, the state, the nation, the world knows Orlando. And if we don't take advantage and capitalize on that brand, then we're missing something. The same is true for Lake County, Seminole County, Osceola County. You know, if you leave the state and people say, where are you from? And I say, I'm from, you know, Gotha, that doesn't mean anything to anybody outside this immediate area. If I say I'm from Orlando, they relate. The bigger challenge for me is confusing when we entertain foreign dignitaries. They say, oh, Orange County, California.
Right.
And so it is confusing to explain that you're the mayor of Orange County and that Orange County includes Orlando. Oh, you're the mayor of Orlando. Well, no, not the mayor of Orlando either. And so you get into a civic government 101 class. So it is, that is a little confusing. I try to avoid, you know, try to bypass that quickly and get right to the point of what do we have to offer in Orlando and Orange County. And that's kind of how I say it, Orlando and Orange County. And people seem to get that pretty quickly.
And when you talk also about wanting to grow businesses, especially in that tech sector, we hear a lot of conversation coming out of Tallahassee from Governor Rick Scott about the need to make Florida a business-friendly environment. You are a Republican yourself. Do you think the state's taxes are low enough and regulations attractive enough to bring in those businesses, or do you think that more needs to be done?
Well, I think they're two separate questions. When you talk about our tax structure, we are very low tax structure when you compare us competitively against other states. So I think we're in the well poised in that regard. One of the things that major corporations are going to look for in choosing a place to live and to do business is the stability of a community, the stability of the resources. Headlines that you can't balance your budget are not stability builders. So we're not in that situation, but we can point to some other states that are. And I think we have to balance a low tax structure with not having it so low that we scare off potential companies that want to know that they're going to have the services, they're going to have the schools, they're going to have the infrastructure, they're going to have the educated workforce. We have to have all of that. And the key for me is not so much exactly where our taxes are as much as are we efficiently using every dollar and are we earning the trust and confidence of the citizens who live here.
What about being able to put out incentives to bring in businesses? Do you feel, you know, these are tight economic times. Sometimes, you lose some revenues that could be coming in through incentives. Do you feel that Orange County has done well in that arena? And do you think it's a strong tool for you to be able to use in this tough economy?
It's a great question. I have a philosophical answer and then I have a pragmatic answer. Philosophically, I wish that governments across the country didn't use economic incentives, tax incentives. I almost wish we would just have a federal ban against that, because I think what would happen is it would force every community to compete based on how appealing the place is to live and their overall tax structure, and not trying to use this as an enticement. Having said that, the practical side of me knows that if that is the playing field, then I'm going to compete. I'm not going to miss out on an opportunity because my philosophical desire isn't met. And that's why we do use tax incentives. We use them pretty carefully. And the governor and I have spent a fair amount of time together. We both agree that that's not the first thing we talk about. If you're not interested as a business owner, if you're not interested in living here, and if we haven't made this an appealing place in a lot of other ways, then we're probably not going to lure you with a tax incentive, especially considering our relatively low tax structure. But we got to be able to put tax incentives on the table at the right time, and we do that. One of the programs that I'm actually putting on the ballot for voter approval on January 31st, if I can put a plug in here with your listeners, is a job creation tax abatement referendum.
Tell us what would that do.
Yeah. What it does is it allows us at a local level, Orange County government would be able to offer tax abatement. That would mean, say you're an existing business and you want to expand a new wing to bring in 20, 30 more employees. Currently, the way that would work is you build a new wing to your building, you'll pay taxes, additional taxes on that new construction. You'll also pay additional taxes for every chair, every desk, every computer, every phone that goes along with that new employee. And one of the barriers to making a decision to expand is the additional cost. I would like to remove that one barrier for a temporary period of time, on average about 5 years. Say to a company that's here, you want to expand, you're going to add 20, 30, 50 new employees. You won't have to pay higher taxes associated with that for the first 5 years. In order to do that, I need the public support. It goes on the ballot on the 31st of January. And then each one of those companies that want to come in for that tax abatement would have to make their case before the Board of County Commissioners in the public hearing and justify that the benefits to the overall community outweigh the potential loss in revenue. Now, we're not cutting our revenues. We're not lowering the taxes we currently have. We're forfeiting the potential for future tax in exchange for future jobs. And I think given that where we are with unemployment, it's still at 9.7, that getting people back to work, it needs to be our number one goal.
Let's put that to our listeners. What do you think about that idea of tax abatement for businesses? You can tell us on the WMFE Facebook or Twitter pages. You're listening to Intersection on 90.7 WMFE-FM. I'm talking with Orange County Mayor Teresa Jacobs. I'm Mark Simpson. Don't forget, you can also email us intersection@WMFE.org. You mentioned that public hearing, and I know you're a big proponent of sunshine in terms of government, but government having some trouble lately in the local region, Workforce Central Florida, new leaders, Governor Rick Scott, ordered the resignation of the agency's entire board after allegations of mismanagement. The agency is publicly funded, nonprofit charge, trying to improve labor market. We're talking about business right here. And, of course, you have been watching that very closely. We have a new chairman there at Workforce Central Florida, former attorney working with yourself, Kevin Shaughnessy. What do you think are the changes that are going to be coming out of that?
Well, I tell you what, we have put together, I think, probably the strongest, best governing board that not only Workforce Florida, Central Florida has ever had, but probably that we've had in the region on anything. I am so impressed with the caliber of people that have agreed to be part of this, Kevin Shaughnessy being one of them, Thomas Cathedra with Walt Disney World, folks that most people don't know, but people they do know, Rick Walsh and his the turnaround he did at the blood banks. I mean, he's just an incredible businessman and brings that business acuity to the issues. So, Sandy Shugart, Dr. Sandy Shugart with Valencia, who knows a lot about creating programs to train people to find jobs. So they're on a serious mission to turn that agency around, and more changes will be coming.
Do you think the situation that was allowed to brew and eventually festered up, is that a reflection on previous county government administrations allowing that to happen? Or what do you take away looking at that as it unfolded as the root causes? Is it just a lone wolf or what?
No, I tell you what I think it was. I think it's I'm a big believer in process over looking at individual people. You need to have processes in place that promote good governance. That system was not good governance. And most of it is mandated by the federal government. And you have a board with 30-plus people. Does any one person feel like they have a serious responsibility when there's so many people at the helm? And then you had people on that board who had a financial interest in the outcomes of the decisions. I mean, that's inherently a problem. Then you had a consortium that was accountable back to the citizens of five elected officials, four of which rotate every year, and they met every other year. So the consortium did not sense any responsibility either. There was no responsibility except for at the staff level. And obviously they weren't responsible.
Teresa Jacobs is the Orange County Mayor. We're talking with her on Intersection. I do want to, when we talk about oversight and finances, get into an area that I know you've been looking at heavily. That's the new Performing Arts Center downtown Orlando. $380 million Performing Arts Center is moving forward, but the project did face a funding shortfall, and you thought that needed to be reviewed before working out something with Orlando Mayor Buddy Dyer on it. You discussed plans for the Performing Arts Center and the $480 million Amway Center when you were on Intersection a year ago as a mayoral candidate, and I wonder if we might just listen back to what you said then.
I think there are certain projects that make a lot of sense. We have what's called a CRA, a Community Redevelopment Agency, that governs the taxes that are collected in the downtown area. Orange County contributes to that, as well as the city of Orlando, directly through their ad valorem taxes that are collected in that area. And we've used that for many projects that we think have countywide benefit. And I certainly think the arena, the Performing Arts Center, all do that. They benefit more than just the city of Orlando. I think they benefit the whole region.
So that was Teresa Jacobs a few months ago saying that the CRA is there to give money to the Performing Arts Center. But you thought that when the shortfall came up, it needed to be reviewed. This kind of took Orlando Mayor Buddy Dyer by the side. It was a surprise to a lot of people. Why did you take that stance, and how did it end up working out?
Well, the main funding, in fact, the only funding from Orange County that Orange County could control, was the tourist development tax. And we had allocated a certain amount of money. What happened was, within days of me being elected and before actually taking office, I was approached by the city saying, it looks like we're going to be short about $5 million. You know, we underestimated how much this project's going to cost. They were short $5 million, but we were also coming in much lower in terms of tourist development tax at that point than had been projected several years earlier. Our agreement with the city was, when the tourist taxes are available, after we've met all of our other requirements for tourist development tax, then we'll make them available. So they wanted that money sooner than it was available, and they wanted more than they originally asked for. The $5 million went to $15 million, went to $25 million, and, you know—
You put the brakes on.
Yeah. Mayor Dyer and I had many, many conversations with his senior staff, my financial team. We brought the comptroller in, the Orange County comptroller, who's independent constitutional officer, and said, we're not putting any more money into this until we look at this project very carefully and make sure that the money, that we're value engineering and that we're getting the bang for the buck. And what we found was some things that we in Orange County would never have done. Now, it was the city's project. All we were was basically a funder. But when you go back to a funder and say, oh, we want to change the terms of the deal, we want you to give more money than you agreed to, I think the funder has a right to say, no, not unless you prove to me that this is necessary. What we found, as I said, was they had hired three architects instead of one. They're down to the one architect we said has to go, they got rid of. We found several millions of dollars that could be saved. They saved them. They brought in a real project manager who took every single one of the recommendations that the team that we had put together recommended. And then they did what I said they needed to do. You've got a group of people who believe in this project. They need to step up. And if a loan needs to be made, they wanted us to make a loan. Get the private sector to make the loan. When the money's there, when the tourist development revenues come in, we'll pay them back.
And Jim Pugh did step forward with a large contribution. And so do you think, is the Art Center suffering in any way with the changes made?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. No. In fact, I will argue that it is much better, because less money is going into it, which means more money would be available for operational costs. I will tell you, I still have an outstanding concern. It's not my problem per se, but then I didn't think my problem was going to be their $30 million shortfall either. And that is, will there be the money available to operate it without sacrificing money from other arts and cultural organizations that rely on that philanthropy. So a little concerned about that, but that's Mayor Dyer's issue primarily.
You're talking long-term.
Yes.
Will it be able to operate under its current financial structure?
Yeah. And that's a reasonable—I mean, when you look at other performing arts centers across the nation, the estimates that were used for this performing arts center were optimistic in terms of how much revenue they generate and how much expense. I, when it comes to finances, I'm an optimistic person, but when it comes to finances, I'm very conservative. I'd rather plan for the worst, hope for the best. And I don't think, when you're dealing with public funds, there's any other approach that makes sense.
And that operational figure yearly?
I'm trying to remember what it is. It was a couple of million, some of which is coming from the city, none of which is coming from Orange County.
Talk to me a little bit about that relationship with Orlando Mayor Buddy Dyer. An Orlando magazine this past summer quoted you as saying you don't trust Orlando Mayor Buddy Dyer. You've said trust is a two-way street, and you and Dyer are working towards that trust. What's this relationship with Mayor Dyer?
Well, I mean, that quote was right after Mayor Dyer said that he didn't trust me. When asked, what am I going to do to fix the problem, I do think it's a two-way street. And I did not feel comfortable with the leadership that had been exercised over DPAC. And I think that, you know, if you look at what has transpired since, every issue we raised was legitimate. And trust is, it's not a trust your intention, but it's a do I trust your judgment and your decision making if you're going to come back and change the deal? And I think that's very legitimate. Now, if, you know, in terms of how do we get along wonderfully. We work together on an awful lot of projects. You saw us
just
yesterday.
You were just out the other day at the Stanton Solar Center.
Yeah. So it's not, there's not animosity. There's not ill will. I know Mayor Dyer well. I know his kids. I have high regard for him. Philosophically, when it comes to our approach to fiscal issues, we're pretty far apart. And so that's where you will sometimes see some clash. And I think that's healthy in a community. But when it comes to big projects, we get behind them. We both supported SunRail. I don't think it would have happened, frankly, without both of us on board. I think that my role with Governor Scott was crucial, being a fiscal conservative.
What was that role? You know, we've had our political analysts come on here and say you're one of the few elected Republicans in this region that Rick Scott will listen to. Why do you think that is?
Well, it probably started with the fact that I didn't support high-speed rail. I'm the only elected official that I'm aware of in Central Florida that didn't support high-speed rail, and the only one who came out publicly and said, I think the governor, I shared the same concerns that he has. I don't think that leg from here to Tampa was going to work. You know, I think you want to talk about high-speed rail, and the governor and I have talked about this. You know, run high-speed rail down to Miami,
Which was part of the plan for high-speed rail.
Phase two, but it was in the plan. Phase two only happens if phase one works. Okay, you do phase one, it goes belly up. You think we're getting phase two? I don't think so.
Well, Ray LaHood and federal officials would maybe sing a different tune on that.
And I beg to differ. And I think I have that right. I mean, I'm a strong believer in the right of freedom of speech. And I think I got elected by 68% of the electorate, and I'm entitled to disagree with anybody I want to.
Do you have the governor's ear on other issues as well?
Absolutely. Yeah, like we have a very good relationship. We have talked a lot about streamlining. What we're doing here in Orange County. We're talking about working with the state to streamline, especially environmental permitting processes, because the state's got several different agencies. We've got several different departments. It's very cumbersome. I'm maybe one of the few environmental Republicans, because I believe that if you don't have an environment, you know, eventually we don't have a planet. And I think that the environment is extremely important to our economy. But I don't think that needless bureaucracy and trying to figure out how to get a yes or no answer ought to take months or years. And he and I are on the same page on that. We've talked about a lot of issues. We've talked about legislative issues. We've talked about just came back from Brazil talking about how we can do a better job in international trade and promoting, you know, those kinds of businesses here.
Let me ask you a little bit about environment and growth. As we know, the Department of Community Affairs at the state level has been dissolved by the governor. Now, a lot of that growth regulation has been placed on local governments to manage. And there's been a big debate whether or not when communities are looking to expand, whether that's businesses or residences, is there now a race to the bottom in terms of incentives that are going to be between local governments? Before, it used to be if you're going to build this, you have to expand the road X amount of dollars according to the Florida concurrency laws. Now it's up to individual communities to say whether or not they're going to enforce it, how they're going to enforce it. So maybe this community says, we're not going to make you do it. This other one says you are. How do you manage that, especially for Orange County? Do we have the capacity to do that?
You know, that's probably one of my greatest concerns in terms of taking away some oversight that I think was necessary, because you do have, unfortunately, a competitive environment between cities and counties.
Capital moves.
Yeah. And it's more competitive now than it's been a long time. And I do believe that we need to have regional plans for how we're going to provide the infrastructure, the road, the transportation systems, the education systems. I've been a big advocate for that. I believe in a low-tax structure, efficient government, but I believe strongly in quality of life, because I don't care how low your taxes are. If people don't want to live here, the businesses aren't going to come. So, and that happens with more of a regional cooperative approach. And we've lost some of the state oversight there. So it's incumbent upon us as a region to figure out how to agree not to race to the bottom, as you just said, which is very easy.
Do you as the mayor have the capacity to oversee all these projects for growth that might be coming up and hold feet to the fire and say, you know what, this deal is not right for the county?
Well, you're talking about just at a county level or
well, county, regional, you know, as you see your role?
You may remember back in 2004, I brought forward a charter amendment dealing with school overcrowding that affects all cities in Orange County. I have no jurisdictional authority outside of Orange County, very little jurisdictional authority when it comes to land use outside of unincorporated. The charter, the people of Orange County have a lot more jurisdiction because of the nature of the government that we have, that citizens can adopt ordinances that govern not just what Orange County government does, but all the cities. In terms of our regional partners, the only power that you have is the kind of the power of the bully pulpit, the power that the public gives you, the power that the press, when they cover you. If you are on the right issue and the citizens agree with you and they communicate that to the members of their county commissions or city commissions, that carries some significant weight. But in terms of jurisdiction, we don't have it now.
I mean,
I don't have the jurisdiction over my board. I mean, if my board wants to march off a cliff, all I can do is do what I think is right.
Last thoughts on growth. Of course, the Wekiva Parkway is a big project for this region. There's been a lot of criticism of that. Recently, the Department of Transportation has put out a list of projects which might be put on hold to build that parkway to the tune of $300 million. We have just recently fellow Orange County commissioners coming out finally saying that they're against the Wekiva Expressway. What do you think in terms of that project?
Well, it's what do I think of the project and when do I think the project is...
Do you think we need it?
Yes. Long term, absolutely. To not have a completed beltway, I think, is extremely short-sighted. I can't think of any major metropolitan area that doesn't, and we're way behind in that regard. So, yes, I think it's needed. I think that the plan for it, the environmentally sensitive nature of it, was very responsible. And one of the reasons I'd like to see it done sooner than later is because I think over time the pressure is going to be there to say, never mind the recharge area, never mind everything else, let's just build it the old way. And so I'd like to see it done because I think we have a good plan. I also think it's more cost efficient now than it will be likely at any time in the future. Having said all that, we've structured a plan that my hope wasn't going to take any money away from non-toll projects.
Mm-hmm.
But because we couldn't get the federal government to come to the table with additional funding for the very expensive interchange, the I-4 to 429 interchange, that's $400 million out of a $1.6 billion budget. Because that wasn't there, there is $225 million that will come out, is estimated to impact the five-year work program. What does that mean to other projects, and what is the priority in terms of timing? Does the Wekiva Parkway come before some of those other projects? That's the kind of conversation that we need to be having as a region, not as one single person. The problem that we have, before you ask me what the answer is that the data that we've received right now is very difficult to decipher because we've had several different things affecting the work program at one time. Revenue estimates are coming in lower than projected, not surprising. Gas tax revenues are lower. The cost of building projects are coming in lower. That's a positive. The Department of Transportation, I am in regular conversations with the Secretary of the Department of Transportation.
You're talking about Anant Prasad.
Anant Prasad, yes. I know he has worked very, very hard to try to maximize the use of the dollars that we have in that work program. So we're not setting aside money that isn't going to be used, contingencies and those types of things. At the end of the day, we still have to make priority decisions of what comes first and when.
I've been speaking with Orange County Mayor Teresa Jacobs. Mayor, thank you so much for the time
and
coming over.
Thank you.
The conversation about what's happening in Central Florida continues online at the Florida Talks blog. Visit WMFE.org/intersection to find out more. There you can also sign up for our weekly podcast. Support for Intersection comes from our listeners. Amy Green is the assistant producer. I'm Mark Simpson, and thank you so much for listening.